Hey, you've found the San Carlos Computer Club podcast. My name is Scott Stimson with International Computer Solutions. If you're looking for computer solutions anywhere on the internet, I would appreciate it if you check our business out, internationalcs.net. And this is the San Carlos Computer Club. If you enjoy this recording and are looking for more, check out our blog at sccclub.org. I am the guest speaker and host of these meetings, and this is today's meeting for June 6th, 2020. Sit back, relax, and enjoy our Google Meet podcast. Tech on. I hit some buttons here, guys, because it's about that time. Testing. Hey, are you guys still with me?
Yep.
Oh, good. Everybody was so quiet. Everybody was so quiet for a moment there. I thought I lost you.
See, I'm wondering if your camera's not on in your computer, Jim.
I'm looking for it in settings, Linda, and I'm not finding where.
You know what? I like Linda's idea, but I don't think that you're looking for it in the right place. I think that the suggestion is accurate, but the place to look for it is wrong. If you go into, is it Chrome that you're using?
Is it what?
Is it Chrome?
Google yeah, I was Chrome going through Edge, which now is Chrome.
It is Chrome. So then, let's see.
I beg your pardon?
Chrome.
He said he went in through Edge.
Well, wait a minute. Why don't I go directly from when I clicked on the email, it took me into Edge.
Well, you're gonna have to go into Edge to get your camera settings. Your little camera that's at the top of your laptop. Okay. You're gonna have to go into.
So if you're watching my screen right now, Edge. I'm not sure where the settings are in Chrome under Privacy and Security, under Site Settings. There's a permission here for camera. I don't know if you can see what I'm doing. And here you can allow that website. Now, we're under the assumption that you have blocked it
in the email. I may have.
And so if you had, it would show up in the list.
But what I was saying is when I got your message this morning and I clicked on we will be continuing to use Google Meet with meeting code, and I clicked on the meeting code.
Yes. Jim? Hello?
Failed. When I loaded up, it said the camera failed.
Okay, you're breaking
no,
up.
No, Jim, you have to go into the computer settings to turn the camera on and give it permission.
Yeah, Linda, where do you find that?
Okay.
I'm not familiar with that setting in Windows 10.
Yeah, where
I'm
do I find that?
I'm on my Windows. I'm on Google on my tablet.
Right, but Jim's on Windows 10.
Okay.
And he's
well,
using
I'll go
a web
over
browser.
To my computer and look. I'll go over my computer and look.
Yeah, because
Linda, I appreciate it.
I'm not certain about the setting that you're referring to. As far as I understand, the camera should just be available as a resource to whatever program. It can be isolated to only one program. And so if you had another program that was using the camera, that's why I suggested Skype, then it could be occupied by that program and not allow you to use it on another program.
Well, for example, I did open up Skype, but I have don't seem to have any way to try to connect.
Well, if you go into Skype settings, there's audio video settings that let you test, and you should see the camera there if it's working in Skype.
No. Go to your Windows, and when the ABC comes up, go to the camera, and you have to give it permission.
Well, what's the ABC?
Okay, going back.
And it comes up with everything
in Windows.
And go to the camera. I just clicked on my new laptop, and it says you have to give it permission.
Right, Linda, can you walk us through that? Because I'm having trouble visualizing what you're talking about.
Well, go to your Windows in the left corner.
Right, the start
button. All right, Linda, I see what you're talking about.
Cheryl's here with her teacher voice. Jim, down in the lower left-hand corner, there is a four little square thing that looks like a window. When you click on it, a alphabetical list of everything that's on your computer comes up.
Oh, this
that's
is
what
where...
she means by the ABC.
Okay.
And under camera, under C, you should have calendar, camera, and it says all this. It looks like another app is using your camera is what mine says. But there's a get help and an okay.
And that's what mine says. I just found it.
Okay,
so it doesn't tell me what app is using it.
What you've found there is the Windows 10 camera program, like you have a camera program in your phone. There's also one in Windows 10. I'm still not certain how this helps Jim with his problem, though.
Well, if it says that he has another app using it, then he has to find the app that's using it.
Okay, well, this is where we were before with the Skype. I mean, what other app could possibly be using the camera?
Maybe he needs to
that's go... That's exactly right. Now, if I go back in the Skype, let's see. Appearance, audio, and video. Let's click that on. Camera...
That's funny. I totally have other apps using my cameras, but my camera program came up just fine. I don't know if you're looking at my my camera program works even though I'm using my cameras for this experience. So I'm not certain what's going on.
What is it called when it lists everything that's running? On your Windows 10.
Task Manager?
That's the word.
Yeah, if you click on your taskbar with the right mouse button, you'll find in that menu a Task Manager option. What is that?
Robots are organizing and supervising.
Task Manager, right.
Yeah, and then if you go to Processes, if it doesn't come up on Processes... And that shows you the list of things that is running. Look at that. My nemesis is Chrome. I've got 24 processes of Chrome. Ooh, I wonder what that is. Somebody making a shake?
Okay, I'm in Task Manager.
Okay, and so then if you're following along on my screen here, you've got a list under processes of everything that's running in the computer. I've organized mine by name.
Right.
And then as you go through that list, you're really trying to identify something that might be using the camera.
And Jim, I had to find it under more details on my window. When it opened up Task Manager, I couldn't see processes. I could just see apps.
Oh, I forgot that.
Right,
yeah.
I just opened up more details.
More and fewer. That's right. Hey, if you guys don't mind,
there's a lot of things running in the background.
Since we are going, I'm just going to do a quick introduction, if that's all right.
Scott, just before you do that, your screen that you're sharing is extremely fuzzy. And even when you come on, I was on with somebody the other day and they needed to clean their lens on their camera. I don't know if that would help, but is everybody else seeing Scott really fuzzy?
Yeah, it's not. It's the camera lenses are clean. The problem is my bandwidth. I'm still really constrained by my bandwidth where I am.
And okay, so, well, I went to the eye doctor this week, and when you put your screen up there, it looks exactly like before she got the lenses right.
I wish I had that much control over it. I really don't. What I can tell you is that we seem to be getting a better quality video feed going out on the YouTube channel than is actually going out in our Hangouts meeting. And I think it's because Hangouts is very forgiving with bandwidth, and the way it forgives you is by making your video look horrible. It doesn't stop the video. It doesn't try and fix the video. It just downgrades the quality immensely. And so it does make it difficult for me to try and share things because you kind of have to conceptualize them because they're coming so fuzzy. Which I would blame Hangouts, but the real problem is I just don't have enough outgoing internet. So I'm gonna do a little introduction here, assuming everybody's with us. We got 8 people with us. My name's Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions, and this is the San Carlos Computer Club. We meet every Saturday at 9 to discuss the tech topics of the day in a very unorganized and apparently a troubleshooting environment, since we're always trying to make our system work just a little bit better. I have come with some topics. Some of you have provided me with some topics. I brought some of my own. And I'm interested in hearing if any of you have showed up with topics. Is there anything that you guys want to make sure we get to talk about? Does anyone have a topic they would like to bring to our meeting? Or are we going to continue to work on Jim's camera topic?
Scott, I can give you a call after this. Let's not waste the club's time.
Oh, well, I find it really, a very interesting, as an example of things that we can troubleshoot on.
Okay.
If you've looked inside your browser for the permissions, did you say you're using Edge? Is it the new Edge you're using?
Yeah, it's the one you and I loaded when we updated Windows 10.
Yeah. So I'm going to bring that up right now and go into settings. See, as from my experience, I think the only thing that could be blocking your camera would be another application or permissions issue. So if you're looking at my screen, if you can make it out, this is the settings for Microsoft Edge. And I really don't know where I'm looking. So I'm just going to type camera into the settings search and see what comes up. Site permissions exists in this as well. And it put it right in front of me. I don't know if you can tell. It's highlighted it in yellow, and it's under site permissions. And it says camera, and mine in Edge is set to ask first. So I would check and make
sure. Oh, I just typed into.
Go ahead, Jim.
Now, I went to setting. Well, no, I guess this was the Windows 10 settings.
Yeah, and I think you need to be in the Edge settings. So you'd have your Edge browser open.
Back into Edge.
You should be looking at Edge because that's where we're doing the conversation. And then in the upper right-hand corner.
Right, okay.
There's the 3 dots, settings and more. And you click on that, a drop-down menu appears.
Right.
And then down towards the bottom, there's a gear that says settings.
I'm there.
Okay, and then when that page comes up, in the left column at the top is a search field. And you can type camera in there. Or I typed in camera.
Let's do that. Okay. Yeah. The camera, one result, it's highlighted in yellow.
What's it say under it?
Ask first.
Okay, it sounds like in the browser it's set correctly because it should be asking you when you get to it. If you click on the camera, you should have a list of allow and block.
Okay, block says no sites available. Allow, meet google.com and
okay, so
web.skype.com.
So there is not a permissions issue you're dealing with. I think you're dealing with a camera problem or a program other than Meet using the program. But I'm thinking that the Meet is the program that's using the camera. I'm thinking you're having a camera problem.
Hmm. Okay, say that again. So you think it is actually a camera problem, not a program problem.
Yeah, I'm just speculating, and we can get together later and we can find out what's going on. Maybe it's a camera driver problem.
Scott?
Yeah, Bill, what you got?
What's a quick way to check his camera? Is there a way of just taking a picture?
Well,
a snapshot of yourself?
That program that Linda and Cheryl was finding in the start menu, that program called Camera.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be a bad way to test the camera. But I suspect, from what we've been talking about, I suspect that he can't use that camera program because his camera is being used by another program. So to do a really good test would be to reboot the computer, not be in Skype, not be in Google Meet, but go straight to the camera program and see if it works.
All right, why don't I do that? I can watch you on the tablet.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to close everything out.
I'm so happy everything has decided to start working now. It's always a good feeling.
Awesome.
What's that? I sound good? I hope I sound good.
Yeah, we don't look so good, but we sound good.
Yeah, I wish I could do something about that. I think the only thing I can do is contract more internet. Which I'm in the... You know what? Here's a topic I didn't plan on talking about. I had Carlos from Telmex over here yesterday, and we got into a big discussion about my area. And he verified for me what I've believed all along, is that I've got as much internet as I can get. Technically, I'm set up to get more. Technically, I could contract twice as much, but I'm blocked by an artificial wall, an artificial limit, because there is so many connections that need to be provided in my area, the Ranchitos, that they want to make sure to provide at the bare minimum to each connection. If they were to sell me 20 megabits a second, then they would have to literally take that other bandwidth from another one of their connections. In a nutshell, they've saturated their equipment here in the Ranchitos, and so they're having to use an artificial block to keep people's bandwidth down so that everyone has an equal shot at getting internet.
So here's a question for you, Scott.
Certainly.
You are logged into this in two places, on two separate cameras.
I am.
That's so that you can do your YouTube?
No, actually, no. In fact, I'm going to turn off one of these cameras because that'll be cutting into my bandwidth as well, and it's unnecessary. But I've actually got this other one running because it allows me to let people into the group. It's a little cumbersome, but what I've done is I've taken our meeting and I've stuck it on a completely different desktop that's hidden from my view. And And it's because I don't want to touch it. I don't want to mess with it. I'm afraid I'm going to break it while we're in session. And so I've got it. But because it's way over there out of view, I can't hit the button that says, let him into the meeting. And so what I did is I set up another computer just so I can hit the button, let him into the meeting. If that makes sense. But I by turning off the camera, I think I...
Okay, should... Scott, I got something.
Oh, okay, Linda. If we're done talking about me, go ahead.
Okay. No. Okay, I turned on Google Meet in my laptop.
Okay.
And I get this notice. It says, allow Meet to use your camera and microphone.
Right.
Yes. So I don't know where to allow it to use the camera and the microphone.
Well, it should be asking you when you go into it with a block or unblock kind of dialogue.
When it's not showing anything. It just says
when you first
ready
start,
to join, and then this white notice came up.
So, if you're getting a notice with
the only thing that allows it, it says dismiss.
It doesn't have an allow button.
No.
Okay, so what I would do then is I would get into your Chrome settings, like we were talking about before, and go and check and make sure you haven't blocked it.
Nope, I've got it.
So when you go into the permissions under the camera?
Yeah. It's right here.
Oh, I'm trying to show it to you and I'm showing the wrong screen. So site settings, there's camera settings. These are general settings. And under there, it has a list of who's allowed and who's blocked. There's also, you can do recent activities. It sees Meet as one of the recent activities. And here's all the permissions for the Meet site. And camera and microphone have already been allowed for my session. I don't know if you can see that on your screen.
Okay, so this is what mine says. It says camera is blocked. And then it says on the audio, it says the speakers are blocked. Okay. But it won't let you turn them on. They're grayed out.
So is this when... So you're at permissions?
No, I'm on the Google Meet, on the Google Meet page. And then I went to the three dots at the bottom.
Yep.
And when I meant the three dots at the bottom, up came on, turn on captions, settings.
Wait, I'm not sure where you are.
Report a problem, report abuse, help.
What I would do, just so we're all on the same page, is I would go into settings and then at that search, type in camera.
Okay, when I go into settings on my Windows 10 in Google Chrome, it comes up with three tabs, audio, video, general.
The correct.
Audio says microphone, mine says default, and speakers default, and there's a test on it.
Cheryl, where are you?
Video, okay.
No,
three
you're,
little dots
you're in
at
Windows
bottom.
10 settings, and we're talking about Chrome settings. For the blocking...
Okay, Google Meet.
Right, in Google Meet on Windows 10, you should be running Google Chrome for the Meet meeting.
I am.
And then if you go up
not
to...
Not the three little dots at the top of Google Chrome, but
yes.
At the bottom of Google Meet... It says more options. When I click on it, like
oh, yes.
Linda said, change oh. layout,
okay,
turn
Cheryl,
on caption settings.
Cheryl,
nope, I got it.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry, I was still working on Jim's problem, and we had already gone through that section.
Okay, I've got the problem. You have to go to https://meet.google.com. Google.com, click the settings, and then change the settings.
Ooh.
Okay, but that's actually I mean, if we're talking about Jim's problem, we've already been there and done that.
But that's where you go to turn on the audio and the video.
Right. And he has it on, and he still has no video.
Yeah, well, I don't either. It says... Oh, guess what? A little thing up at the top just came up, and it says, Meet.Google wants to use your microphone and use your camera.
There you go.
Allow or block.
That's, you should be getting that message anytime your peripherals want to be used by a website. That's the message you should be looking at the first time you go into to Meet, and you should be allowing. If you were to block it at that moment, it would be in that list, and you'd never be able to use it. And that's the reason I had Jim go through that list to make sure he hadn't inadvertently blocked those items. Now, he's got some other issue going on because all those things are set correctly. And that's why I think there's some camera driver hardware thing going on. Because I think it is Meet that's using his camera. He's just not getting any picture through it.
Okay, I'm on now on my computer.
Yay.
Yay. Now how do I exit?
Linda's been calling again. We'll have to call her Dolly.
That's what Dolly sounds like.
Linda Gerber has left the meeting.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. I can hear you.
Jimmy looks like he's gone forever.
Yeah, he said he was going to come back on his tablet.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. Linda, can you hear us?
Yes, Linda, we can hear you.
All right, this is better.
Because you're on your computer? I think it's better because then you can be reading at the same time and bringing up articles, and I find it much easier. So, does anybody have any other topics? I've got a couple of things from the last meeting that I really ended up spending way too much time on. If you guys are interested.
Yes.
Is anybody? Oh, okay, cool. I still have trouble with this format. I just wait for you guys to be just right on my answers. So last week we were talking about tab grouping. If you remember the features that are found in the new version of Google Chrome where you can group tabs together. While I'm talking about it, you can... I'll do this on my screen where you can assign a tab group, add to new group. It gives you a tab color, and you can give it some tab header, and then you can add tabs to that group. If you're watching what I'm doing, I've got everything under topics, and I'm going to make it an orange group. And then you can deal with that group of tabs as a thing. As their own thing. I don't know if you guys are following along with what I'm doing. So that's what we talked about last week, was tab groups. And I'm happy to answer any questions you might have on this concept. But one of the questions that somebody asked last week was, well, can you save them when you close your web browser? What if you want to come back to these groups? And I mentioned that I know there's a program to do it, but I have no experience with the program. I've never used it myself. And so I would have that answer today. And I do. The program is called Session Buddy. And when you install it as an extension to Chrome, it sits in your taskbar, or not your taskbar, your address bar up at the top here, if you're still following along with me. It's a blue icon called Session Buddy, and when I click on it, what it does is it shows me my current Windows tabs, it has a perpetual recording of separate tab sessions at different time periods. I don't know if you guys are seeing this, but these are all groups of tabs I've worked with, and they're getting recorded regularly at regular intervals. So I can go back to something I was working at before. And then I actually am able to save. If you can see my screen here, there's a save button. And that's when I can create my own tab profiles. So I created for a test, I was doing research on Linda's suggested T3 box. And I wanted to come back to it later, but I wanted to just clear my screen because I was just sick of all these tabs and I had a completely different thing I was going to do, but I didn't want to lose all that information. So I went into Session Buddy and it listed everything I was doing, and I hit the save button and I titled it Android TV and IPTV, and it put it down here under saved sessions. And I also created a save sessions for the pages I typically have up whenever I start to do club work. And so now I have two save sessions of tabs, one for the thing I was doing with Linda's IPTV and the other thing that I just do all the time. If I want to bring those tabs back real quick, I can just hit club session, and then there's an open button that lets me open this. Now, it might appear a little confusing. It took me a little while to wrap my head around what was going on. But after I figured it out, I found it extremely helpful. And especially this kind of ongoing history. When I've hit the close button and I've lost all those tabs I was working on, and then I go back in. Oh gosh, do I regret doing that now? I'm just going to open a new window. And it's going to take a while because I got a lot of stuff going on. I hope you guys are still with me. It looks like you are. Here's my new window. I'm going to turn off the task manager. In case you don't know, side note, the task manager will peak your... it'll make your computer work even harder because one of its jobs is telling you what's going on. And telling you what's going on takes a bit. So here I am in a clean window and I'm like, ah, my tabs didn't come back. I can go to Session Buddy and... Damn it. There it is. That's what I was working on. I don't know why it says 10 hours ago, though. Maybe it hasn't... You know what it is it hasn't changed in 10 hours. And I can hit this open button. And I want to open 5 tabs. And this is creating the same session I was just in with you. So this is an extension for Chrome, and I suspect it's available under the new Edge as well, because they're basically the same infrastructure, they're the same engine. Session Buddy. Now, if you want to install this Session Buddy to keep track of where your tabs, tab sessions and save them and go back historically, you would do that in extensions, and you would do that by going to your settings in Chrome. Under this menu in Chrome, if you're following what, if you're able to make out what I'm doing, I'm in the Chrome settings menu under More Tools, and you'll see extensions listed there under More Tools. If you ever forget where it is, you can go to Settings and you can type extension into the settings, just like we did with the camera.
Okay, I'm in the extensions and it tells me my two extensions that I have, and then it says search extensions. What is the one that you're talking about called?
extensions.
Is it called tab or something?
No, it's called Session Buddy, and search isn't going to work. Darn it.
Oh.
I think they've moved it. Let me go into extensions. You can also type Chrome:// extensions. If you're a real nerd, you would know that works.
Okay, because I've got one Chrome app of Sheets and an ad block.
Okay, so that's search extensions. I believe search is through your extensions. So here I'm starting to type Session Buddy, and there it is. I mean, the premise of this is that you've got so many extensions installed, you can't find the one you're looking for.
Okay.
And so, I mean, if you're watching along with me, I'm just typing in the names of some of the extensions I have so that they'll pop up on the screen. But I don't have a lot. I have Google Docs extensions in here, and I have a couple other Google things, and then I have this Session Buddy. But when you're in extensions, yes. Okay, this is when you're in extension, to the left, you've got the three bars, the hamburger menu. If you click on that, down at the bottom, it says Open Chrome Web Store.
Yeah.
So if you click on the Chrome Web Store, this will bring you to a place where you can search for Session Buddy. So search in the store. Mine's coming up very slowly if you're following along.
Well, I'm going to go for free.
Session. Hey, I didn't spell it right, did I? There
Social communication.
Session Buddy. There it is. Thank goodness for Google, because I didn't spell that right, but it still found it. And you just add it to Chrome using the Add to Chrome button to the... I mean, you can get more information. You can click on it, and it'll tell you all about it. So I don't know if you're somebody that's turned into the multiple tab people, but that's definitely become the thing now, is that while you're working and while you're doing research, you end up finding yourself with dozens and dozens of tabs open. And sometimes you're not ready to just walk away from it. You want to be able to come back to it later. And so this is an application that would make it easy for you to go in, save that stuff under a name, and then go back to it later.
Is it Tab Session Manager or Session Buddy?
Session Buddy.
Oh, I added the other one.
Yeah, Session Buddy. Session Buddy is the one that was recommended to us in the video that we were looking at last week about the five new features of Google Chrome that people should know about. In that video, he was talking about the tab grouping under a color and a name, and he just offhandedly said, if you're looking for a good way to keep track of all your tabs when you close the browser, if you want to save your tabs, look at Session Buddy, which was his way of recommending an app for doing that kind of activity. And... The guy that was recommending it is from CNET, and I follow a lot of his news. Isaac, I think is the way you pronounce his name. He is a reputable source, so I think that unless you hear... I've never used an application like this, so I don't have another one to recommend. I'm recommending his recommendation. I'm still new to this, so take it with a grain of salt. But this is the one he... By him recommending it, what I know is it's not full of adware. Hey, is that Jim? Did Jim just make it on with video?
I'm back.
you figured it out?
And it worked.
Oh, and you're looking
well, up. Apparently just rebooting.
Just rebooting fixed the problem. Is that right?
Wait a minute. Yeah. So anyway, I guess that was it. Just...
Very cool. Well, we were just talking about Session Buddy. Hey, if you, I don't know if you were following along, Jim.
Yes, I was.
Oh, good, good. So this is an easy recommendation for me. I've been using it for the week, and I've found it very useful, but I am also that kind of person that has dozens and dozens of tabs up while I'm working. And I'm also the kind of person that somebody will call me, and all of a sudden I'm on a completely different task, and I just need to get everything out of my way. And this has been a great program for that.
Okay, so that was from
The Google Chrome Web Store.
Tips for Chrome. Yeah.
That's right. It was a side tip. Last week we were talking about five specific tips that were covered in that YouTube video. And in that YouTube video, he also offered this Session Buddy up as a great program for keeping track of large groups of tabs over time. Having a group of tabs. Well, I could imagine if I didn't want... I do different profiles. I think we've talked about that before. I use a Google Chrome profile for the club, and I use one for the bed and breakfast. The two browsers and the two profiles never cross each other. But you may not be that kind of person. You might just do everything under the same profile. Well, that would be very easy using the Session Buddy, because I could have a session of tabs that I dedicate to the bed and breakfast and a session of tabs that I dedicate to the computer club, and I could just title them as such. Again, let me bring up my... So this is an example of that. I've got a club session here. Those are the tabs I use during club. Here's some research that I was doing with Linda's information. And they're just sitting here waiting for me to come back to them, because I hit Session Buddy and I saved them, and then I closed everything and went on to something else. Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that was one of the things that I've been doing this week that was like of large weight. There was another thing that I did. And I think you saw it in my Session Buddy here, is this research that I was doing on Linda's Android TV box, the IPTV box, this Dreamlink T3 that has been recommended. And it really took me down a rabbit hole. In fact, why don't I bring this up? Where did it go? Dun, dun, dun.
The rabbit hole that I've just gone down is under settings for Chrome. I find my Chrome, the appearance of it is wrong. I don't see a lot of contrast. I can't really see what's going on. So I'm playing around with some different themes in the Chrome Web Store.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I found a high contrast. I found a Winnie the Pooh. Oh, okay.
Well, I just tried the Chrome Web Store on my tablet. It says it's not available on my tablet.
Yeah, I've had that experience on my iPad.
Now, those mobile devices, they're actually a different beast. And I bet that you have to go to Google Play to install the extension, if it's available. And I would say the same about the iPad, is you probably have to go to, if it's possible, you probably have to put it in. Hey, here comes Stanley. Good morning, Stanley. Are you with us?
I hope he's got his microphone off.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully he can hear us. I'm sorry, Cheryl, where were we? You were talking about high contrasts.
That's okay. I was, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the different themes and trying to, you know,
Well, so I have done a ridiculous amount of research over the last week because of one thing that I thought was strange. I went to look up the box that Linda is recommending that many streamers, many IPTV streamers are recommending for using the IPTV service. And it's $150. Linda knows this. This is what she was talking about. And I was comparing and contrasting it to Android TVs that are out there on these Chinese boxes, Bigil, Fifi. There's a whole bunch of them out there. And the NVIDIA Shield. And I found boxes that had higher specifications than this T3 box. And I was really perplexed because I didn't understand why I would look at this box that all these IPTV streamers are recommending and compare it to a box that appears to be newer with more memory, more storage, and a cheaper price. Why I wouldn't just buy that box? And it became a very difficult question to answer. The main reason is because the T3 box is very poorly documented. When you look for information about the T3 box, it tells you things like it's got a quad-core high silicon processor in it. But it doesn't say anything about its speed, its capabilities. And so it's very difficult to do a compare and contrast of technically, because I couldn't find that information out. I still can't find it. I haven't found a document that says, like the T3 box, Linda, one of these days maybe we ought to get a hold of one and just crack the case on it so we can see the part number inside it, because I can't find a document that says what chip is inside it. But what I did find was the chip is really important. What I found is a whole world of computer that I had not been paying attention to. I had just been letting it happen and wash over me. And I guess the center of this discussion would be this concept of SOC, system on a chip. And you may have heard of these, but you may have heard that term used before, system on a chip. And what it refers to is having everything that you would normally think of in a computer package all packaged on one little piece of silicon, one chip, including the memory, including the video, including the sound, including the CPU, all in that one piece of silicon. And that's where this gets really convoluted, because you can contract an SoC from different manufacturers, and you can pick and choose which CPU, which is the central brain, GPU, which is the graphics processor, the sound card, the network card. You can contract each one of those individual things to be in the chip that you built. So it gets very odd, because all of these chips are based on an ARM-based design. And that's quite a bit different than, say, an Intel-based design or an AMD-based design. The AMD, the Intel, these are companies that covet their designs. They don't let anyone else use them. You buy a Pentium computer, it's running a Pentium chip from Intel, and that chip is based on the latest Intel designs. But when you buy an ARM chip, and you find ARM chips in your cell phone, both Apple, Huawei, Samsung, all of these distributors of cell phones use their own version of an ARM chip. ARM is a company that licenses their designs but they don't do any of the fabrication. And so my Huawei cell phone has a high silicon chip in it. And the model number is a T something. It's like a T620. It uses a CPU, a graphics processor, and a CPU that are both licensed from ARM. And they're stuck on the same piece of silicon. So the specific high silicon chip in here has grabbed a specific type of CPU as well as a specific type of GPU to build the Hisense chip that was going into this Huawei, high silicon. By the way, high silicon seems to be a Huawei chip. So if you've got a device, the T3 is a high silicon chip. We're not sure which one it is. It's one that supports quad core, but that doesn't really identify it very well. But the fact that it's a high silicon chip identifies it as a Huawei chip. So this is how you can have a chip. You can be looking at boxes on Amazon and find these boxes with really high capacities, but video streamers are not recommending them. And it's also why you could have a box like the T3 that video streamers are swearing by, specifically the IPTV streamers are swearing this is some of the best equipment to use, while having a very small memory footprint. The T3 has 2 gigabytes of RAM and 16 gigabytes of storage. This is very low system requirements in this day and age. But what we discover is... that doesn't have anything to do with the performance of the box. What the performance of the box is based on is the GPU that's been put in the chip that's been put in that box. And so there's a lot of boxes out there on the internet that have these high capacities, but the chip they're running is not ideal for video streaming. There's these subpar video chips, and I can only imagine they're using them because licensing them from ARM is very cheap. I am going to put all this information in one place on our blog so that people like Linda and myself have a resource to go to so they can refresh and understand better what's going on. Reddit, if you spend any time on Reddit, their Android TV forums, they have been through this backwards and forwards. And I've come up with some links that I think are very helpful in this pursuit of knowledge. The reason you would be doing this pursuit of knowledge is because you're not understanding how to compare these Android TV boxes. Why is a box that costs $50, why does it have 4 gigs of RAM and 64 gigs of memory, and IPTV streamers are saying, no, you should be using the T3 that has 2 gigs of RAM and 16 gigs of storage. Well, it has nothing to do with those requirements, with those capacity numbers, and has everything to do with the GPU that is on board the CPU chip that was put in that particular device. Wow, I'm a bit winded. Is everybody's eyes glazed over?
Okay, let me add some details on this. The IPTV boxes, you're not downloading movies. You're not putting any information into the boxes. You're strictly using the programs that are already in the boxes. For instance, they have their own store, and you can download some different items in their store. The Google Chrome app works okay. It's not the best. The Netflix app is terrible because normally on the Netflix app, you have all your boxes of your movies. Well, on the Netflix app on the IPTV box, you you have to go down in the categories and then it'll bring up the movies. But it also has on this on this IPTV box, it has the Cinema HD, which everybody loves, and it's got a couple others. It does have Plex.
Plex,
but you're really not putting any information into these boxes. You're strictly watching TV. Plus they have the place to put in the code for your TV programs. For your TV program. So for instance,
wait a second. Before you get too far away from your idea there, I just think it's important to reemphasize the point that you're making. Is that what you're doing, you are not reading content. Content is not getting buffered on the box. The content is not getting downloaded to the box. Content is being consumed as quickly as it can in real time through a real time stream. And the ability to do that is directly based on the quality of the video processor that's in the box. And that's why, I mean, you don't need a lot of RAM to do that. You do, when you're looking at a Netflix box, the more RAM you have, the worse internet connection you can have, because it can buffer into that RAM the video you're trying to watch. And Netflix can make this toss up between quality that you're receiving versus how much it was able to buffer. If you have 2 gigs of RAM in your Netflix box, you may end up with a more inferior quality, like a blurry movie, because your internet connection isn't that fast. Whereas the same internet connection on a Netflix box that has 4 gigs of RAM may not be as blurry because it was able to buffer so much more from it, if that makes sense. IPTV is doing is very little buffering. The IPTV is like real time, like rabbit ears. That's what it's trying for, is your TV experience. And so it doesn't really, you probably need the minimum amount of RAM in the box. What you really need is a video card that can decode very quickly on the fly. If that makes sense.
Okay, well, one of the biggest problems is you're not having the issues off of your internet with the IPTV box. The issue you're having with the IPTV box is them, because they are broadcasting from somewhere in Indonesia and you don't know where they are. And they are getting the signal off of different providers. So you do get repeats. Like it'll repeat, all of a sudden.
Sure, but for this discussion of box quality, that's not really the issue.
Box quality is like perfect.
And it's very important. The box quality is very important, because a box that you see on internet, I did it myself. I'm like, why would I buy this T3 box when there's a box sitting right next to it that has a newer CPU in it, has more memory, and has more RAM? Why would I possibly buy the T3 box for 3 times the price? Well, the reason is because the chip that's been put into this $50 box, it may be newer, but they didn't license the good video processor for it.
Correct. And in order to get the programs, if you buy those video boxes, you've got to go through Perfect Player and some other rigmarole in order to get the programming. And so you have an issue, because we tried to put the IPTV onto
like a fire
the Amazon stick.
Yeah, great example.
But Amazon has blocked a lot of the stuff, so you can't get on. See, before you had to put Perfect Player onto the Amazon stick. And then you have to go in, because you have to have a place to put in their code in order to get the program. And most of the Amazon boxes don't have, most of the the boxes don't have a place to put in the code. So as you have to put in different programs, then you use to that end. But this Buzz TV and the DreamLink, they already have the place in there to put in your IPTV codes. And there's a lot of IPTV companies. So, and you have to be very careful of the IPTV company that you subscribe with, because Dish Network is really coming down on them, of course, and trying to put everybody out of business.
Oh, well, yeah, actually, Dave sent me a link to an article that's happening right now. I actually stuck it in as one of our topics. I don't have quite as much information on that, and I'm happy to walk away from this topic if you guys are glassy-eyed and your ears are tired. I just wanted to point out that if you're talking about one of these IPTV boxes, or you're talking about I'm sorry, I guess I'm not ready to go away from this topic just yet. One of the other things I wanted to mention was the discrepancy.
Head fake.
Sorry. Was the discrepancy between the Fire Sticks. And we've talked about the Fire Sticks in Club before, where the Fire Stick 4K, I've mentioned it before, is one of the best pieces of equipment that I've ever used. But I wouldn't use that, I wouldn't give that a halo effect, because the Fire Stick is nowhere near as good a quality equipment. There's the Fire TV, second generation, the original Fire Stick, and the Fire Stick 4K. And the 4K is such a dramatically better product than everything else in the Fire line, in the Amazon Fire line. And it wasn't very clear why until I started doing this research. And what I discovered is the Amazon Fire Stick 4K stopped using the ARM GPU. They stopped licensing it from ARM. And they started licensing a GPU from PowerVR. And it is a much higher quality video processor. And so, like normal people, they're like, well, here's the Fire Stick and here's the Roku. Which one runs better? And you say, well, the Fire Stick 4K is running better. Well, that's awesome. But it didn't make sense why the other Fire Sticks were so inferior to this latest one until I started doing this research and discovered that they had given up on the old video processors and had licensed a new video processor from someone else. Now I think I'm done with this. I guess I'll finish this topic by saying, if you find yourself looking for an Android TV, because there's a whole new generation of Android TVs coming out on the market right now, and some of them are incredibly impressive, and they can hold their own against some of these name brand devices that you've become so familiar with, like the Roku, like a Chromecast or a Amazon 4K. There's very impressive Amazon or Android TV boxes out there. There's a brand new version of Android TV that's been released. So this market is just about ready to get dumped, all this competition for boxes. And you may find yourself going, I just want a generic box. I don't want to buy into Amazon. I don't want to buy into the Apple TV. I just want a generic box, kind of like my Android tablet, but on the TV. That's great. But to know what you're getting, you really would want to do some searches. And what I've done is I've put together some links of information that I'm going to, in the future, I'm going to publish it on our website that you could go to help you see the difference between these different devices. And I think I've also figured out a workflow if I was shopping for an Android TV that you could follow to figure out whether you want to buy that particular Android TV. And in a nutshell, it would be...
Can anybody hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. It's really quiet, though.
Oh, good.
You're incredibly quiet. I would identify the TV, the Android box you were interested in, the Android TV box. So in this case, with Linda, it would be the Dreamlink T3. And I still haven't identified the chip that's inside it. But I would identify the box in question. Oh, I want that Beagle MX9C. And I would go and find that. I would find the chip that goes with that box. And then I would follow these chip. I've got some links to Wikipedia pages that identify the video processor for particular chips. So you can find out what chip is in the box, go to the Wikipedia page, look up that chip, and see what video processor it's using. And use that information to determine whether that's really the box you need. And now I'm done with this topic. Happy to answer any questions people might have, if they're still with me.
Well, let me say this. I have 75 people in San Carlos that have that box.
Yeah, no, that box.
They have anywhere.
Go ahead.
They have anywhere from the T1 to the T3.
Yeah.
And a couple people got the Buzz TV, but Buzz TV just came out with a new box.
Well, I think one
I
of
think
the most
it has Android 9 in it.
Hello.
I think one of the
Don't
most
turn off your microphone.
Just a minute.
One of the most enlightening things that I came across was this idea that you could have a box that has a brand new chip in it, but has a really weak video processor. Like, the date that the box was built will have nothing to do with the quality of the video processor in it. The video processor that in it is based on what they licensed from ARM. And so that T3 box could very easily have a very sophisticated video processor that was built back in 2016. But because it's so sophisticated, it's bumped the price up of your spending cost for the overall box. Because that video processor designed in 2016 is the more sophisticated video processor that's able to handle these IPTV streams. Whereas a video processor designed 2 years ago could have been a budget video processor. So your manufacturer could go, well, we're just going to stick this chip in because it's cheaper for us to buy that design. And it's going to appear to be a 2000 or a 2020 chip. But the reason it's so cheap is because we didn't invest all the money in that video processor. So these T3 boxes, there's a good reason that they're at $150. It's just they're not telling us what chip is in it. I suspect they've got a chip that the CPU isn't that impressive, but the GPU was state-of-the-art back when they started it, when they made the design.
Well, you know what? I can find out because I can get in the BIOS. Would that tell us?
Okay. It might. You're looking for a chip identifier. There's also some Android programs. I'm sorry. I wasn't ready to answer that question. That you could install in your device and it would tell you what chip is in it. So like some system info app if you're about. In fact, I don't know if your about would work. I think I was trying to do that with my box and it wouldn't do it. In the Android about, it identified my manufacturer on my Android TV, but it didn't identify what chip was in it. I had to go and find research on the box to tell me what chip was inside my Android TV box. And what I discovered was that the video processor in my Android TV box probably would not allow IPTV, your service, to run as well as the T3 box does, because it has a subpar video processor in. It has an adequate video processor in it in a day and age where it could have had an extremely well-built video processor in it. And that's why you've got Apple TV selling around $200. You've got the Amazon Fire Stick 4K selling at around $140. You've got these no-name Android TV boxes out there, and they get up there into the hundreds. Oh, the NVIDIA Shield is rated as one of the best Android TV streaming platforms for IPTV as well. However, that's up there at $200, and people are like, why would I spend that much money on one of these devices? Well, there's a very good reason, but it's not very clear, that reason. And so I've got enough information here that I can make it clearer why you would spend that much money on a device like that. And I'm the kind of person where if I was looking at the T3 going, well, I mean, that's great for IPTV, but if I'm going to spend that kind of money, maybe I want to spend another $50 and get an NVIDIA Shield or an Apple TV, because there's so much more going on with that device than IPTV, and it's only $50 more.
Well, you can't use the NVIDIA Shield on DreamLink, and they have their own proprietary program.
So DreamLink won't support NVIDIA Shield.
We have three boxes you can use. You can use the DreamLinks, you can use the Above, and you can use the Buzz.
Okay. Well, Linda, we don't have to keep going over this. I know this doesn't matter to a lot of people here I find it an interesting topic, but this may not be affecting everybody's life. But why don't you and I exchange more information so that I can put together a page that we can all go to when this becomes an issue in the future? I suspect over the next year, you're going to be looking at a Fire Stick, and right alongside that purchase, you're going to see a number of Android TVs available to you. And you're going to be looking at the purchase prices, and you're going to be wondering, why wouldn't I buy one of these? And that's when you would go look for this information.
Scott, can I say something?
Somebody is out there talking, and it's so quiet I can't hear them. Can anybody hear them?
Can you hear me now?
Is that you, Irving?
No, it's Stanley.
Oh, hey, Stanley. Yeah, your mic is really low.
Is it better now?
Oh, it's getting better.
Okay, let me just say this. What's good about the T3 is the GUI. I've been using the Earthlink like for different series, and when it comes to GUI, I know what's there. If I go to a different GUI, I get lost. It's not the same. It's not as. In other words, the GUI is what makes the T3 so great, because it's consistent with previous models.
So what I think, if I understand what Stanley's referring to, is that graphic user interface when you hit the home button and you see your apps there and you see the programs and the guide that you're going to be using in the T3, he finds that very easy and consistent with the previous versions of the box. People that use Rokus and Apple TVs probably would have the same kind of feeling about it. They started with the first generation, they moved to the fourth generation. It all feels exactly the same. Thank you for that input, Stanley. I didn't realize you were using the T3 as well, so maybe this conversation's relevant to more people than I was expecting.
Oh, yeah. I've been using Earthlink for years. Now, when I try a different GPI, I get lost, especially when you get those cheap boxes. I had one box that I tried. I couldn't navigate it. It was so different. The GUI was not consistent with what I was able to use. Of course, I do have this low visibility problem, but nevertheless, the GUI is what makes the Earthlink really worth every penny.
Hey, if I could just expand on that for a moment, my Android TV has a graphic interface that is so poorly designed that I can't change anything on it. I'm able to add apps to a bar at the bottom of the interface, but everything above the bar is set in stone, including a YouTube app I never use because I found that better YouTube app. I can't just pull that off of the screen. And what that's really referring to is poor software development. It's just a cheap Chinese box, and they threw it out there with the minimal amount of finesse to that interface. Whereas you get on an Apple TV, it's obvious that they have spent a lot of time thinking about the way you're going to navigate through your content. The Amazon Fire TV, Fire Sticks. Okay, when you're moving between TV experiences, it's not intuitive. But when your whole experience is in the Amazon Stick, and you've adopted your thinking to that stick, well, then it's very well laid out. It's making suggestions in front of you. It's putting up latest releases and putting everything in front. It's very easy to navigate. That's because they spend a lot of time thinking about that kind of stuff. And some Chinese knockoff Android TV has, their manufacturer has probably not spent that much time thinking about it. Another one that I think a lot of people don't think about is the remote control experience with an Android TV. The one I'm holding up right now, this is an infrared remote control. We associate infrared remote controls with a TV experience, but only because we've been beaten into submission by them. This is not a great interface for using a TV. It's just the cheapest one that they could build, and so we've grown up with them. We've grown old with these infrared remotes. But the infrared remote control, you know from your own experience that it's got to be pointed right at the TV set for it to do anything, right? You have to be a certain distance from the TV for it to have an effect. There are times when you're hitting navigation, and if you're pointed off-center, the navigation isn't working. Well, when you bring an Android TV into it, or one of these kind of computers for the TV experience into an infrared remote control, I have experiences with my Android TV where I'm doing navigation. I'm going to move to the left. Something has caught my attention while I'm moving to the left. Here, I'll put this on. I'm moving to the left, and something has caught my attention, and I slightly move my remote away from the box. The box continues to go to the left. Click, 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 click. And I got to move the remote control back over in front of it to stop that behavior. It's horrible. With an Apple TV or a Fire Stick, these aren't issues. With the new Fire Sticks and the new Rokus, these aren't an issue because the remote control is a Bluetooth device. And so you can hold your remote control, you can hold it behind your back, you can point it out the window, you can keep it down in your lap, and you can do your navigation because it's got this 30-foot digital connection with your device that is doing the navigation for you. It's a much more consistent, it's much more like a cordless keyboard than it is an infrared remote control. And so if I was in the market for an Android TV, that's definitely something I would think about. Boy, I'm having trouble getting back to where, there we are. So I would be looking at the chip, and I would be looking at the remote control when I'm making my purchase decision. I'm sorry, Linda, you were going to add something?
Well, let me say this. The remote control for these boxes, they're like what you have. I mean, if you don't have it like aimed over near the, it doesn't work, and they're flaking.
There has been a lot of compromises made on that T3 box, and it's still so very expensive, and it's because of the video processor in it, which I still haven't been able to identify. But I'm sure it's the video processor that's making it possible, making it the recommendation for IPTV.
Scott, can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead, Pop.
Okay. I'd like to make a little announcement. I know we're about out of time, so I just wanted to share with everyone that this is kind of a news flash. 50 years ago today, Scott's mother and I were sitting on ADAC waiting for his arrival into the world. He was born tomorrow. Sandy's arguing with me. Now he was. Scott was born June 7th. And so it's been an interesting experience. We thought for a number of years he was just a little alien. But then he discovered computers.
If I could add to that, I think everybody's really surprised by the fact I was born and not built off of some matrix of data and technology.
Well, we were suspicious about that. And let me tell you, we were moving back to Boston for me to go to school when he was 13. And he kept saying, I want a computer. We had no idea what a computer was then. So he convinced us that he should get a computer. And he bought a Tandy at Radio Shack. And he started working on the computer. And he had no one to teach him. We were back in Boston. He had no one to teach him. We'd ever seen him read were comic books, because we didn't know if he could even read the manual. But he studied that manual until he knew it inside and out. He started programming on a tape recorder with no help from anybody else. I happened to take a computer class at Harvard, and I knew nothing about computers. Nobody there knew anything about computers except the instructor. And he said, if you really want to know computers, talk to a young teenager. So I talked to him. I said, what would you think about having my son come in and talk to the class? He said, that would be great. So we scheduled a time. Scott came in, 13 years old, sat there for an hour, doing just what he does with you. He was just as comfortable as could be explaining computers to everybody in the room who knew nothing about them. And that's been his whole life ever since.
So he had 27 years of experience of talking to us old people about his world. That is so
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah, we're very proud of you, Scott. Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, guys.
Happy birthday.
Hey, Hello, happy Scott. Birthday, Scott.
Boy, that was a long time ago. I was actually 12. I turned 13 while we were there. That's right.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And what Dad doesn't remember...
Well, so you were born on ADAC?
Yeah. That's what you got out of that story? Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff in that story, huh? You taught it at a Harvard class when you were 13 years old? You born on ADAC? What Dad forgot to mention is this is right after he was a senator. And we were living in Juneau for half the year. And I had been eyeing that computer for a year in the local hardware store, because there wasn't a Radio Shack, but there was an Ace's Hardware. And so they had Radio Shack products. And so it was sitting there on the main street in Juneau, right around the corner from Dad's office. And I would go over there. I would go over there every time I get out of school, and I would go play with that computer. And so I knew it well when I was asking for it when we were in Boston. And what Dad also isn't remembering, maybe he'll remember it if I'll bring it up now. Alaska was one of the first states that had digitalized all their legal precedences. And so I might be saying this wrong. I might not have the right vocabulary, because I remember it as a 9-year-old and a 10-year-old. But they put a terminal in my dad's office. And so he had access to all these legal documents through this digital terminal, this dummy terminal to the mainframe. And I remember distinctly all these senators and House representatives that did not know what to do with that terminal. And I remember me and a couple other kids, children of the representatives, that were playing on these terminals. And I don't know if you remember, Dad, but I got in trouble for using way too much paper on the machine that was out in the hallway. This machine that was like twice my size, spitting out paper on tractor feed, white and green paper. And I was using Dad's terminal for whatever it was, and I was getting chastised for using up resources too quickly. And I wasn't the only kid in that group.
Hey, so, Terry.
Yes.
Did you know Chuck Duras?
Say the last name again.
Duras.
Duras? I don't recognize the name.
J. Duras.
With a Duras. J?
Yeah, he's my cousin, and he is one of the foremost authorities in Wales. He was a biology teacher in Juneau, and then he had some World War II boat or something he lived on in the summertime.
Oh, boy.
I thought you might know him.
Don't recognize the name offhand.
Okay, so were you a state senator or a U.S. senator?
State.
Oh,
state.
Okay.
Yeah. Sandy told me that I could run as long as I was willing to take one of the children with me. So Scott got to go live in Juneau for 2 years, and finally the rest of the family gave up and they came down and joined us for the last 2 years. But 4 years in the state Senate was all I could handle, so we moved on from there. But I was thinking about what Scott was just saying about that terminal. Yeah, they put that terminal in. I happen to be on the finance committee. They put that terminal in my office, but I didn't have a clue what to do with it. Neither did anybody else. But what amazed me was I had gone to law school, and I remember them telling us at the time that these entire law libraries would at some point be on something like the computer. And sure enough, I had the entire legal library on this computer. And as Scott was explaining, he was the only one that knew how to access it. I sure did.
More than once, I was sitting at my dad's terminal looking at a flashing red sign saying, "You need the correct security to get into this area."
Did you bypass it?
No. I was 9 years old. What do I know about bypassing security at that point?
Yeah. Well, you never had any phone bypass or any phone bypassing
phone. I can't hear what Mom said.
That was part of the story that we found interesting was he just became obsessed with telephones. And so he would take our phones apart, put them back together again, and on one of my birthdays, he gave me, we had two lines, and he was able to switch one line over to the other, and he'd put it together with paper clips and scotch tape, figured out how to switch these lines over. We were going through all kinds of things like that, and we'd have the phone man over about every 3 months to straighten everything out again. He said, "Why do you let that kid keep playing with the phones?" So then years later, he's down in San Carlos, and somebody says, "Well, you know everything about all these other things. How come you don't ever know anything about cars?" And he said, "My dad wouldn't let me near the cars."
Truer words have not ever been spoken. My father's approach towards me playing with technology is, "Don't hurt the car." My father would be the first to admit, and myself as well, neither one of us have much mechanical abilities, but my abilities have always been in electronics and engineering and software and things like that. So Dad wasn't ready to teach me how to work on a car. And
not able to.
Yeah, wasn't in any position to give me the experience, and we weren't living a life where we could afford to have a car not working. In fact, I'm still living that life.
I was going to say, you've learned a lot about cars living in Mexico now.
Well, what I've learned is to own three of them, and maybe one of them will be running at any given time. Well, thank you for that sentiment.
Jerry, those are good stories.
Yes, I will be 50 years old tomorrow.
Okay.
For my birthday, a couple of buddies and I have decided that we're going to do a watch party. We're going to do a private watch party of bad movies. Yesterday, we were setting it up using this same system. And so I think I've got it worked out so that I can project a movie through Hangouts, and then we can all just rip on it while we're watching it.
Okay, I gotta go. So happy birthday, Scott.
Thank you, Linda. I didn't get to Dave's topic, so I'm gonna keep it on the back burner for next week. Was there anything else here that I wanted to make sure you knew? Nothing that can't be used next week, so I think I'm good. Do you guys have any last-minute things you want to make sure get into this meeting?
Scott, we just wanted to ask you to give us a couple minutes after the meeting. We got a couple items we need to discuss with you.
Okay. Can I give you a call back? Can we shut everything down and we'll do it then?
Sure, that'd be fine.
Great.
That'd be fine.
Well, thank you guys for joining us. And this has been a
Goodbye,
fun
everybody.
Meeting. Say that again. This has been a great meeting.
Bye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Happy birthday, Scott.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, guys. I'll talk to you next Saturday, if not sooner. I'm still doing the same thing. Occasionally, I'll want to test some stuff, and I'll send out the bat signal asking, hey, join my meeting so we can test some stuff. But until then,
Okay. Until
next Saturday, everybody have a great week in their quarantine spaces. As far as I know, in our area, nothing's changed. Only essential businesses are supposed to be open. Even though
we've got appointments booked and we're going to be busy. But Scott, when we're not at appointments or inside the house and the wind is down, we've been playing with our new fly camera, our drone.
Oh, neat. Wow. I wonder if there's a way you can share some of that footage with us at some point.
Oh, yeah. We'll send you some.
Yeah. In fact, you could probably use the presentation feature in Hangouts. If you could get the video on the screen, you could present it to us.
We'll work on it.
All right.
A homework.
Well, you guys have a good week, and we'll talk again on Saturday, if not sooner.
Okay, happy birthday, Scott.
Thank you,
Take
Bill.
Take care.
You guys too. Everybody, tech on. Well, that was a great meeting. So, everybody out there in internet land, I am going to shut this off. Dave, if you're still listening, we will do your topic next week because I've still got it on the list, and I think it's going to be interesting. And what we'll do is we'll just look for what has happened since those cases. And for those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, you'll have to tune in next week. Until next week, this has been Scott Stimson from the San Carlos Computer Club and International Computer Solutions saying if you're looking for computer solutions anywhere on the internet, I'd appreciate it if you'd get a hold of me, scott@internationalcs.net. My business's website is internationalcs.net. If you've enjoyed this meeting and you're interested in more like it, subscribe to our podcast or check out our YouTube channel. Just search for sccclub.org. If you're in iTunes or any of your favorite podcasting software, look for the San Carlos Computer Club and you will find us and you can subscribe to us. If you come to the channel, you can look at previous meetings, and you can also watch us live. If you don't want to be part of our meeting, go to YouTube, and you can watch us have our meeting. Until next week, everyone, tech on.